And our guests, I think we've got a lot of guests today. The department led by the COO, Mr. Shane, and we invited important guests from the municipalities, metros that are receiving the UFDG grants, as well as the municipalities that have been accredited. I could see there the face of a Thekwini municipality. And I think today we are expected to receive presentations from the Thekwini Nelson Mandela as well as Cape Town metros, according to my agenda. But before that, we are in the morning session. I've got two sessions today. The following will be my agenda talks something else, but I have a problem. There's Gauteng city is Tswane. Johannesburg. Yeah, Johannesburg is here. But the people who have set up now, who have positioned themselves, is Johannesburg. So let's just allow them to begin. I don't think it's a casting stone. With those, I think we do have other guests, but I think we have to make a quick introduction. But before that, I would like to express our appreciation as the Portfolio Committee for the municipalities to accept our invitation, because we are here for one common purpose. All of us, although we are the vanguard, or we are playing oversight over the department, but we do have a responsibility on the funds that have been appropriated by Parliament. Wherever they go, we have to follow those funds. If they are being spent appropriately and if there is value for money, we don't expect to hear one day that we have appropriated funds and then Parliament appropriated funds, and then at the end of the day there's nothing on the ground that is happening. So it is our responsibility to ensure that those funds are spent appropriately. And on the issue of the USCG, the Portfolio Committee understanding is that this grant is a new grant, and that is aimed to assist the municipalities to plan appropriately. You remember that we had special planning, but the special settlements that were planned according to the apartheid system. But now we have to change that situation. I think after 1994, there have been so many policies that have been adopted by various levels, spheres of government, but seemingly we still have challenges because of the resources. I think it's one of the issues, the resources. For instance, we'll recall that the issue of bulk infrastructure seemed to be a challenge, but this grant, according to us, to rescue the delivery of services in terms of bulk infrastructure, as well, I think, as well as planning purposes. So we want to get a sense of state of readiness and preparedness from the metros, our municipalities, in terms of planning. I know you have planned already. You have got 2030 vision some of you have got 2020 vision. So you have already planned ahead, but the problem was the resources. So I don't think we can talk about planning today. You have planned already, but the issue is about the capacity. Do we have capacity to implement this grant? Do we have policies that are synchronized? For instance, you know that we do have that challenge of working in silos. Do our plans synchronize together with the provincial or national, because there are grants that are coming nationally? So our plans are synchronized. So I think those issues the municipalities have to share with the portfolio committee so that we assist each other in terms of implementing this grant. I think the other issue is the issue of the capacity in terms of research. I think that one is very much crucial for the municipalities to ensure that they do have enough research capacity. I don't know if we do have those capacities, but today I think it's a starting point, and we are aiming to build that relationship between the portfolio committee as well as the municipalities in terms of ensuring that the intergovernmental relations and the cooperative governance principles are being observed. So it's not that we want to take over, no, but we have to work closely with the municipalities for the purpose of making sure that our people receive the necessary services that they deserve. So with those few words, you are all welcome. We're going to be here for the whole day. Even if you are finished, your flight, last flight is at 10. You can enjoy. Mr. Stay, what would you want to say?
Just on a point of information, Chair, but you've touched on it now. You correctly indicated in your opening remarks that we want to make sure that appropriations are efficiently spent. I was a bit concerned that according to our program, that particularly Nelson Mandela and Ethe Queenie were in the morning session and that they're probably flying out in the afternoon. So I don't want our committee to give them reason to stay over and thereby cause wasteful expenditure. So if that was the situation, and I know Joburg is often quick off the mark, but if they were given the morning slot and they are planning on leaving in the afternoon, then perhaps we should let Joburg step down and give them the opportunity.
No, the plans were that Nelson Mandela should be the first one, but let's not make it an issue, because I believe them, they are going to be faster. Then after them, we can take Nelson Mandela. There's 2 o'clock. Fortunately, I belong to 2 provinces. So I belong to Eastern Cape, I belong to Cape again. So I know at least there is a light flight that they can get after if the Joburg can try to be faster. Nelson Mandela is not yet here. So let's continue with our members of parliament. Can you start introducing yourselves and then we...
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. My name is Makosa Galanjobe. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning to everybody. My name is Putstein and I'm a member of the committee.
My name is Richard Mtaran, a member of the committee.
My name is Mduabandu Machoba, Ilungu lele committee.
My name is Archibald Fiedler and a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Ketama Valastole, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Anton Orenser, National Department of Human Settlements. Neville Cheney, National Department of Human Settlements.
Seth Makatuka, City of Cape Town.
Good morning, I'm Councillor Anna Sonnenberg, the Michael Member for Human Settlements, the City of Cape Town.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Wayne Muller. I'm the Finance Director for Housing in the City of Cape Town.
Good morning, I'm Hans Smith. I'm the Executive Director, Human Settlements, City of Cape Town.
I'm Nauman Hendrik, City of Cape Town.
Good morning, I'm Adrian Peters, Head of Engineering, City of eThekwini.
Michael Sutcliffe, City Manager, eThekwini.
Matt Kabalala, NHBRC, Limpopo Province.
Jao Chiang, NHBRC, Gauteng.
Stephen Zizwane, NHBRC, Northwest.
Zwane Fububane from the NHBRC, the region of the inland region. Gauteng, Limpopo, Northwest, Mpumalanga, and the Free State.
Lewahang Poneng, NHBRC Inland Region as well.
Good day, I'm Grace from the PMG.
Good morning, I'm Yasmin Kavadia, USDG support to National Human Settlements.
Mili Lekaba, Department of Human Settlements.
Sean, National Department of Human Settlements.
Devoru Kwaredi, City of Tuan.
Hi, I'm Anna Majabu, Soweto newspaper.
Talana Halley, Salga.
I'm
Gladys Mkundi from the University of Western Cape.
Dumelo Khosimbe, University of the Western Cape.
Arwan Pinar, Director Development Planning, City of Johannesburg.
Good morning, I'm Akona Busakwe, Committee Secretary.
I'm Leopold Zoy, Researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements.
Raymond Tajo from Mangaung Municipality.
Fethi Mukwena from Mangaung Metro.
Good morning, my name is Moeketsi Machoho. I'm General Manager Planning from Mangaung Metro.
Good morning, my name is Luvuyo Ndoi. I'm the Executive Director Infrastructure Mangaung Metro.
Good morning, I'm Togi Kasa from the Training.
Ken Briscoe, eThekwini Engineering.
Good morning, my name is Deborah, I'm here from Malabo.
I am one of NHBRC. Say better Walapi quality assurance, apparently. I'm in Bonanga, Bomasta. Let's start with Johannesburg. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Members of the committee, colleagues from other metros, I think what we want to do today is really present what is also contained in our built environment performance plan.
You know, this agenda, our Secretary Baikoti, we should have received an overview from the department, because even this build in environmental plan, we have got no idea as the portfolio committee. So I'm sorry for that. Let's request the department to do a briefing overview over that. And you remember that you indicated to the portfolio committee that you were going to sign the IGR protocols with the municipalities specifically receiving this grant. And so I think just give a brief summary on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in relation to the Urban Settlement Development Grant, and as we, in the previous presentation, we indicated, as part of the process in terms of approving and assessing the metropolitan municipalities, what between ourselves and National Treasury, there was agreement that the as part one of the requirements of this grant would be for the metropolitan municipalities to submit built environment performance plans, basically indicating within the metropolitan municipalities what exactly their performance plans would be in relation to the built environment. This includes your municipal spatial development plan. There is what is called the SDBIP within the metropolitan municipalities, what the infrastructure implementation plans, what the links were, and what the budget processes and funding allocations were, and particularly what the targets would be in relation to this. So it's what the comprehensive the comprehensive built environment plan process within the municipalities, and as the first process, that's what we would assess them on. So what you'll receive today, as we've indicated previously, is exactly that, a comprehensive plan which covers what your spatial, your budget, as well as your implementation. And as you've requested, also some of the capacity issues which the respective representatives will cover. In addition to that, we've also indicated that as part of the accreditation process, there will be the metropolitan municipalities and the provinces speak about MOUs. We've suggested implementation protocols, basically to ensure that the level 2 accreditation process is completed. So that will result in implementation protocols / MOU. We are aware that the various provinces have started engaging with the respective municipalities, and it's something that as a point the respective municipalities or metropolitan municipalities here may want to just touch on what the progress is, particularly in relation to the accreditation MOU, because that MOU will basically be the process of accreditation. I mean, once that gets signed and for us, that's what we speak about when we talk about the implementation protocol. In addition to that, we've also indicated, and it has been approved by the last implementation forum for Outcome 8, that the metropolitan municipalities will form part of the implementation forum, the political implementation forum, together with the extended MINMEC in relation to that. And as a result of that, and based on the delivery agreements that have been signed with the respective provinces, and based on what gets approved as a result of the built environment in terms of the targets and outputs, the national minister will then engage with the respective mayors and conclude delivery agreements. So for each of the 8 metropolitan municipalities, we will get a delivery agreement which specifically relates to what the targets are in that relation. As part of the reporting process, there's what is called a Section 71 and a 72 report, Chair, that report gets submitted every. There's three reports that will be submitted. What we have also indicated, and will engage with yourselves, is that just as part of the oversight process, when that report gets submitted, it's important that there's some oversight or reporting on progress about how the USDG. So for the next two reports, we'll bring that as well. I hope, Chair, that gives you some idea. What the respective municipalities can do today in Metropolitan is just also give us an overview of what exactly the status is, particularly in relation to the provincial engagements on accreditation and how far that is. We had set the deadline for the 30th of June. We're not going to meet that deadline because what we have done is that we've allowed for that process to be concluded between the provinces and the municipalities. We know that there have been certain difficulties, and I think today represents some opportunity for us to be able to get an idea, or you to get an idea of what some of those challenges are, particularly in relation to the conclusion of those protocols, because they must be concluded within the next month now that the first deadline's missed, and we're not too keen on extending that further.
Thank you. You know, this is a challenge. We expected that the provinces will be here. You know, I don't know whether you forgot me because we have not yet reminded you. But at the beginning, we said the provinces should be here because there has to be that synergy. Now you are raising an issue of some provinces that are giving problems or that are dragging their feet in concluding this delivery protocol. So it's a challenge, but we will continue. But I don't think we can continue this way forever. But Mrs. Singh?
I must express some dissatisfaction that, you know, there's still a process of consultation going on. I mean, we do know that the budgetary process takes place for the following financial year, takes place well before that. And it is of concern that particularly deliverables and targets at this stage, certainly in our financial year, I mean, at the provincial and national level, we're in the first quarter of our financial year already. I can understand the metros are just about to start their financial year. But it is of concern if those agreements and those deliverables at this late stage has not been agreed upon. Thank you.
The challenge, the department has to account for this USDG. So how are you going to account? But let's continue. We'll deal with that in other platforms. So,
okay, thank you very much. I believe in terms of the program, well, the original program put us first, and that's why we set up. So sorry if we jumped the queue. But also just to say that in this presentation, what we'd like to try and achieve is to say, what is the Sustainable Human Settlement Program for Joburg, and how does it really link into the overall development strategy? And I think it's really an approach that deals with urbanization as a key issue, rather than just housing per se and counting of housing. So we've basically followed the format of our document. The first half of the presentation is really around background and some of the planning that's been done, so I'll go through that fairly quickly. It's just for information and to get the storyline right and concentrate the bulk of the presentation on the latter half. Just in terms of some background, in terms of demographics, I think what makes Joburg unique is that in terms of your working age bracket, there's this bulge in Joburg where we far exceed the national average in terms of people. So that is an indication of the in-migration that's happening to Johannesburg. Just in terms of our total development index, we all know that South Africa is very bad in terms of the Gini coefficient, in terms of equality parameters, in terms of the human development index, Joburg is slightly better off than the national in terms of poverty and literacy as well, but that is the real thing that concerns us greatly, and we need to deal with all these aspects to deal with it. So it's really about a more comprehensive development approach. If one look at our broad regional context, to a large extent the city is still very much a divided city where you've got enclaves of poverty very close proximity to areas that's very affluent. And although there's a lot of projects and programs that's starting to change this, predominantly we still have that. I think this is an interesting slide in terms of what we call our deprivation index. It's an index that's been developed in terms of saying, well, classifying communities as being very deprived or not, in terms of access to social amenities, access to job opportunities, income, et cetera, et cetera. And the red areas are where people are extremely deprived, and the green areas are where people are in a good position. And I think what's interesting is that there's no surprises here. Diepsloot, Ivory Park, areas to the east of and in the city of Johannesburg, parts of Soweto, and then the southern portion in Orange Farm, very deprived. I think what is interesting is that 10 years ago, the whole of Soweto would have been red, or most of it would have been red. But because of a lot of investment that has happened, this is what it's looking now. And you can see that there's pockets of actually green coming out, and really, if you compare it to things, areas like Orange Farm, a lot less deprived communities in that area. So we can see the turnaround starting to happen in terms of development. Just in terms of the broad housing development, and especially the provincial housing program, and here you've alluded to this issue with the provinces, it remains a sticky issue. And I'll allow Walter to, at the end of this, maybe just say how far we are with the accreditation issue. But it resulted, really, in development happening. If this is sort of more a broader regional map, not just Joburg, but it's really, the developments have really happened on the edge of where the urban area would be, and that still remains a legacy that's there. Just looking from a transportation point of view, this is the trip generation model, Soweto being here, the Johannesburg inner city being a focal point. But if one would look where the regional economy rests, it's in this triangle between Tshwane, Johannesburg, and Ekurhuleni. That's where people are going to. That's where the economic power of the province really rests. And one needs to take cognizance of that for future development. Just in terms of the environmental constraints and geotechnically, that's the Joburg inner city area. This whole area here, the mining belt, severely constrained in terms of undermining and the limited conditions, as well as this belt here to the south, Lanesia in that area over there. So it's not impossible to build there, but what you can build there becomes a problem, and some more detailed and sometimes very costly studies that needs to be done. In terms of what growth is happening within the city, I think we're trying to get a good understanding of what the growth parameters within the city is so that we can manage better. And we've just published our third review on that is on our website, published it last week. But what comes out of that really is that if you look at township establishment over the last few years, it's really, you can see where in Midrand area and on that northwestern edge of the city is where it starts to pull it to. And when one look at the other side of where informal settlements are, the 180 informal settlements within the city are depicted here, and it gets us to some enclaves of poverty that have been produced, and that clearly is an unsustainable growth pattern, both on the informal side and where new townships are. Now, all of these are applications that have been submitted, but only about a third of those have actually been approved because of the development constraints that we have for services on the edge. Conversely, in terms of densification happening, the larger the block here, the higher the residential density. And we've seen that on the central sort of northern corridor, the city has densified quite a bit. So that was part of our policy to take growth away from the edge of the city, more towards the central area where we've got public transportation and better services. What that really physically looks like, if you look at Lehi in the south, that's the kind of development that has happened over a six-year period, and it's typically your RDP housing that has happened, and it's clearly not a really sustainable development, and you can't call this sustainable human settlement. It really provides people with a house, but no other amenities around that. The market pressures to the northwest have done a different housing typology, but we think equally unsustainable in terms of townhouse kind of development at a 30 unit per hectare density. Once again, with the lack of schools and other facilities in these areas, which creates its own different problems. So it's not an ideal development scenario either. One area that I'd like to just illustrate is that we really need to rethink
the way that we deal with urbanization. Because currently the scheme is let's provide formal houses, and that's exactly what we've done in Dipslet, and this was done in 2000. So in 2003, that's what it started to look like. 2006, that's what it started to look like, and 2009. So within a decade, we're back at an informal settlement, basically. With the load on the services can't carry the load of what's in here. The schools, the social amenities, everything that's in here is inadequate to actually provide for that. And it's just this is the way that urbanization is happening, and this is an extreme case. But nevertheless, it made us think to say, well, how better can we do this? And I'll get back to that a bit later. Just in terms of the growth trends as well, this is building plan applications across the city. You can see most of these are, well, these are all residential applications. Most of these are add-ons to existing buildings. About 30% is new buildings, but it gives you an idea of where the growth is happening. The same in terms of retail, basically around the inner city and nodes that are decentralized around residential areas. Office applications, mostly along this northern corridor or along the main arterials as it goes out of the city. Industrial development, the industrial belt east-west along the mining belt is still the most important industrial area within the city. Infrastructure capacity, I'm going to just glance over this very quickly. In terms of roads, major problems, especially on the main collectors. It's mainly the main arterials that provide a problem. With major congestion there, we've got a gravel roads backlog. I'm only talking about the prioritized areas of Orange Farm, Cliptown, and Dipslet and Ivory Park there, 384 kilometers outstanding. And roads and stormwater backlog is in the region of 3 billion. Stormwater is a major issue within the city. All these areas here that's been indicated by this little dot are stormwater problems that we have and that requires upgrading. In terms of waste management, 1.8 million tons per annum, only 13% of that gets recycled. We've lost our capacity for landfill, basically, in the north. Major investment is required for that. And we're looking at a strategy of saying, well, turn it around and get a lot more recycled so you need less landfill space. Power, these areas in the north are still problematic. If you overlay that with where the major densification is happening, it's at the same point where the actual densification is happening where we've got power problems, but we have programs in place that are alleviating those hotspots. Similar with water in terms of capacity issues. And sewer. So I'm not going to dwell too much on that. I think.
We are away.
Thank you. I think in terms of a key question for us is to say, well, what will the future city look like, and what will the future look like in which the city needs to function? Basically, that energy costs are going to rise. Fuel will be at a premium cost. Electricity, and the dependence on fossil fuels will be a major issue. And we need to think of different ways of how do we deal with water shortage and capture water in a different way and deal with the massive urbanization pressure. I think there's a lot of literature at the moment that's suggesting that more than half the world's population will live in informal settlements in the future. And really, how do we get this rich-poor divide and get our Gini coefficient back to a more comparable with international standard. And I think what we're asking from a urbanization and planning point of view is to say, what kind of city do we need that will globally compete and still meet the needs of people in a sustainable basis? I'm not going to go through all of this, but just in terms of the future citizen is to say, well, what will the future citizen look like and what do they need? And I think for us here, a key question is, the first generation of migrants come into the city. They go mostly informal. What happens to the second generation of that comes out of those migrants? Are they also going to go back onto another housing list, or will they be in a position to look after themselves and contribute to the urban economy? Right. In terms of our spatial development framework, I think what's important here is just to say that the spatial development framework doesn't stand alone. It is linked into a whole range of other strategies, the IDP, the growth management, the growth strategy of the city, and a whole range of policy parameters on this side of which this built environment performance plan would be one of those that deals with it. But ultimately what we're looking for is to build in efficiency, accessibility and sustainability into the system. Those are key things that if we can't meet those, then the city will be in trouble. I'm not going to go too much into the detailed planning, but to say what we're trying to meet in terms of sustainable human settlements is settlements that's got access to public transportation, that's got a variety of housing and economic opportunities embedded in them, got the social facilities within them, and open space. So that's really what we're aiming for at a more detailed level. And as far as housing is concerned, we're looking at a range of different housing typologies, far higher densities than what we currently have that are linked to a public transportation system. The key here is also that we create a walkable city that allows people to get access to that. That's easy to say in terms of a plan, but in terms of managing our growth, very quickly we're looking around our existing public transportation facilities, Gautrain, bus rapid transit system, and the traditional rail. And we're saying around all those stations, if we densify around that within a 1 kilometer walking distance, then this is basically where we need to start to build new city. And in terms of that and capital investment from our side, the two highest priority areas are the public transportation areas and the marginalized areas, parts of Soweto, Orange Farm, Dipsluit, and Ivory Park. And for the medium term, 10 to 15 years from now, those are the areas where the city concentrates its investment to create a different kind of city and typology. All our development plans, and I'll talk about a bit of the detail of the plans and show you some examples of those, have been done, and you can see the relationship with the planning and the detailed framework that's been done in terms of where the priority areas are. Capital investment, all I'm going to say here is that we've got a process that's linking in with the political process and the Gautrain. We have a system where we negotiate the capital budget with every entity and department within the city in relation to the outcomes to be received, and we have a capital investment management system that helps us with that. Physically, this is where all the projects are located that have been asked for. It's basically the wish list, about 8 billion rand worth of projects. This is what our 11-12 budget looks like. Basically, you can see the concentration of projects around these high-priority areas within the city. And I think what is important is to say that we have a programmatic approach around this, so that there are programs for the Orange Farm development, Dipsluit, Ivory Park, the Soweto transportation corridor, inner city, ARP. So those are dedicated programs that are managed. We are very clear on what the 5-year objectives are with those programs. What are the gaps that need to be filled? How many clinics need to be built? How many social facilities, roads, et cetera, et cetera? And those are driven by multidisciplinary committees that sit on a regular basis and report back to the modal committee in terms of that. And then, of course, there's your general programs of like a city power in terms of the deficits that they've got in that northwestern area. Our financing program, there's not enough capital at the moment to really do major new work within the city. A capital budget of 3.8 is basically enough to keep the system ticking over, but we're aiming to build it up again to about 5 billion per annum over the next few years. In terms of the growth agenda and outcome, and I think here's more of the detail of what we want to discuss within this presentation, is really that the focus needs to be around the future citizen. What their needs would be, how do we function with that? And it's not only people living in the city, it's also people making use of the city. And to say, if we link that to a movement system that is a public transportation system, and if that system is the same system that the economic network latches onto, both your major development and small-scale developments, and if we can create the social networks in terms of sustainable human settlements and make sure that there's access to these, then we're starting to build a city that can survive and will be sustainable into the future. What that means physically in terms of transportation, we've got our current BRT system that is running. The first phase are being implemented. The only portion of the phase that still needs to be done in the next financial year would be the link from the city to Sandton. Thereafter, we're looking, and these are all links that are still under studies for sustainability, but a link down that links into Soweto and then further down to Orange Farm is a really important part to get the people in the south linked into the city. Possible future link then along Lebuerta through to Ivory Park and through to Ekurhuleni. And then as this northern area of Diepsloot starts to develop, there would be a link from Randburg through to the Diepsloot area and into the Tshwane area. So in terms of our main transportation objectives for BRT, that's what the medium term basically looks like. For economic development, we've got the well-established nodes to the north on that northern corridor, but around Lanseria Airport is an emerging node that I think will allow for more development in the north with job opportunities close by. And then there's a range of emerging nodes in the south around Soweto, Jabulani, Barrowling, Cliptown, the Mansfield area, and as well in the south with Orange Farm, small developments around the Stretford Station area. But in particular, we're looking at a major economic node in the south where there's very good highway access, rail access, etc., and investigating what if there's a niche market that we can get a new economic node established in the south. In terms of social and housing networks, really the areas of densification that needs to happen is around this public transportation system, around the nodes, around the stations, and around the BRT system, and it's really infilling in those particular areas. And I think there it's important to note that a lot of the private sector development that's happening, especially in this northern area, requires inclusionary housing to happen with that. At the moment, we've not been very successful to get that going because of a lack of legislation, and that's a key point that we need to look at. But here's the key areas that we foresee over the medium term, next 10 years or so, would require our emphasis for major housing development. It's around this major public transportation areas. The opportunities in the north around Diepsloot, the prison land on Fourway side, and the Modderfontein land, there's immense opportunity there for major new development, and I'll do a bit of detail on that as well. But for now, we're concentrating on key nodes, Jabulani, Barra, Cliptown, in those areas for major development within the city with a different kind of typology. And just to give you an idea of what that means is that we're really looking at areas from a transit-orientated development perspective. This is the Mansfield area with a clear urban design framework and with different housing typologies. This is what this area looks like at the moment. There's the Mansfield station. Typically, in a normal urban system, this will be your highest land value areas. In our case, it's the lowest land value areas with very little development around it. But what we're envisaging in this area, and we've done all the calculations in terms of what is viable or not, is something that should look like that. We've spoken to Praza. They're very excited about the plan, the economic opportunities that can come out of this. And both the portion on that side and on this side is city-owned land. And we're on the detailed design phase now with these properties on this side of the station, where we can provide high-density developments in the region of about 250 units per hectare. And that's a project that will probably come on stream in year three of our plan. Just that whole Diepsloot area, it's a very large area with three major corridors, one going past Diepsloot, the one aligning with Midrand, and the other one within the Lanseria area. But we've worked out between 80 and 100,000 housing units is possible there, but it requires an infrastructure investment of about $7 billion. These are just some plans that's been implemented in the south, just to say that even if areas are are not that well located. The way that we develop them at the end of the day can make a huge difference, and the way that we connect them, I'm just going to skip these slides, we're running out of time. In terms of our settlement development program, in terms of UCG, the critical aspect really is that we roll out the transportation, public transportation network further, and that we develop our major developments around the public transportation, and make sure that we deal with the land issue as well. So I'll deal with these issues in the next few slides. I've told you, well, I showed the slide in terms of the public transportation work. Most of this comes not from the USDG, but from the transportation department, and that's a major subsidy. That if that dries up, that's as far as the BRC will go. I think in terms of social development, currently in the next financial year, $59 million goes for social and community development projects out of the USDG, and we link our plan on where we provide that is directly related to the deprivation areas, so that's where we concentrate mostly for providing social and community facilities. In terms of human settlement development, I think this map illustrates exactly where what type of housing is developed. If one look at the next 5 years, the total of housing programs come to $5.4 billion, which would basically take up the whole of the USDG fund. It's always also, in terms of our current programs that's running, the dark dots here, the black ones, are mostly RDP projects. The red ones here are mixed-use projects. The yellow ones are ones where it's high-density rental stock. So it gives you an idea. You can see the rental stock mostly around the nodal areas, and where most of the RDP-only kind of projects where there isn't a mix are mostly in the south around Orange Farm, and it's projects that's there because of an existing situation. But what this really means is that the current projects that's already running and where promises have been made to people and it's going will basically take up the whole fund. It locks us into a process for the next 5 years whereby there's very little room for a lot of change that is happening. And the way that it's been divided is really that in terms of housing type, 62% of the housing type will be RDP, 24% rental, and 14% bonded. So we're trying to mix and match as much as possible. If one look at the kind of project types, then 53% of the project are mixed developments where we do a split of about 50% for RDP, 25 rental, 25 bonded. So that's 53% of those projects will be that. 15% will be RDP projects only, and 32% will be social and rental and higher density. So that's just the shift that we're trying to get. And it's really to say that we want to get this balance to a more 50-50 balance between rental and RDP housing, and to say that in 2015, for every one RDP unit that goes up, there needs to be at least one rental that goes up. So that's the target. And most of the change will actually start to happen in year 3 and year 4, when those higher density projects get introduced and where we get some leeway in the current commitments to actually get going with more, the more higher density developments. We have a program in terms of informal settlements regularization and upgrading. The 180 settlements have been divided, as you can see here, and it's now 189, but we've dealt with 21 of them. There's 9 new ones that came on stream, mostly on private land. It's difficult to, you know, by the time you get through all the court processes, these things are established already. But to give you an idea, that we've categorized them, the ones that we are able to upgrade in situ, the ones that have to be relocated, 34 of them have to be relocated. The ones that were already linked to some or other housing project were 24, and then settlements that will go through regularization, where basically people just get the rights to be on the land, and we do some marginal upgrading of those areas are indicated there. But all of these informal informal settlements are linked to the housing program, either in toto in terms of a in-situ upgrade or part of the relocation. So it's all linked in. It's not two different programs that are run differently. It's just managed in this way so that we are clear on how we're dealing with our informal settlements as well. Chair, then in terms of the USDG allocations, if I look at all the projects that are funded for the next year from the USDG, once again, in terms of the MEEC portion, we were already committed to some of these projects. But once again, in terms of the allocation, most of them are located around Soweto. 30% of them are in Soweto, and you can see the split on that side, 11% in Diepsloot, Orange Farm, 24%. Those are the major areas where the developments are happening. And then in terms of the allocation for the entities, housing is getting almost half of the USDG funding, where roads and water are the other major users of that in terms of the total program. In terms of land, land is an immensely important aspect within this whole equation, and I think one of the major advantages of the USDG fund is that it provides us flexibility to start to look at this at least over a medium and longer term and look at how we deal with land, and we're putting up a provisional $250 million per annum for strategic land acquisition. The immediate needs now are around Zandspruit and the Princess Plot area. A lot of land has been accumulated there, but there's still need for more. But then along that Diepsloot corridor, just east of the inner city, the Doornfontein corridor, and around the rail and BRT station, so that we can get more projects like Nansfield going in those areas. We have a joint land steering committee that looks at all these portions that has been qualified by the city as strategically located, and that really qualifies it in terms of its relationship to public transportation. It is close to a node or a public transportation node, and this committee basically deals with what is the best use for that land and what do we still need more. But to give you an indication of what we're looking at, if we're looking at our housing need of about, just to deal with informal settlements, 240 households that we need to deal with. If we go that with a 125 units per hectare, which is as an average density, we think we can attain that, then we need 2.9, almost 3,000 hectares of land, which we already know we don't have. But basically, if you then add the social facilities required, and the other land requirements for open space and roads and everything to that, then what we can get at the end of the day with at 125 units per hectare from the city's land, the 683 hectares that we have, from that you can deal with about 23% of the housing need. But we also know that once we do more detailed investigations on those land, on the land, our experience is that about 25% of that is really developable. And if we look at that scenario, our current land holdings that are strategically located can only deal with 6% of that housing need. If you look at sustainable human settlement, if you look at providing all the other facilities as well. So land is a key issue. If we don't start to bank land now for the future in very strategic locations, the market will just crowd out the poor at the end of the day, and I think it's critical that we go for that. Chair, to conclude with, we regard this document that we've submitted also as a first attempt at this. We also know that there's a lot of work still to be done. Some of the work that we're looking at is a comprehensive housing strategy where we want to quantify the demand, provide a range of housing options and costs associated with that, so that we can quantify the program a bit better than what we have now and make sure that we can, in fact, meet the urbanization need at the end of the day and basically do the engineering and cost requirements for that. And basically, within the next 18 months, be in a position to know exactly what the cost requirements would be for producing the developments that's required in terms of housing. I think the other area of major investigation is in our asset management plans. We want to tighten that up as well, and then, of course, the various feasibility studies. Okay, thank you very much. That's the presentation. I've also added to the presentation pack the detailed list of the projects per entity for 11-12 that will be funded with the USDG. And I mean, the rest, there's a lot more detail within the documents itself. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think we are going to give the opportunity for members to interact, but you just raised an issue of the policy that is lacking. But you did not unpack what were you referring, what policy were you referring to. I think it is on page 14 when we were dealing with the future city citizens. So I think, can you unpack that? Because as the policy maker, I think this is our one of our important roles to play, so that when we discuss these issues, you must know exactly what are the challenges that you are having in terms of policy aspects.
Chair, thank you. I think if I'm right, you're referring to my remark around the inclusionary housing policy environment. And I think Joburg has developed a very detailed inclusionary housing policy. And the idea is really that for every private sector developer that produces a housing development, that approximately 20% of that should be an inclusionary component. And sometimes you'll be able to do it on-site, sometimes it'll be off-site, and we've got different parameters on how to manage that. The key problem is this, that in terms of the current legislation, when we want to force a developer and say we're not approving your development on the basis that you're not providing inclusionary housing, we'll be found wanting in a court of law. Because the current legislation says you need to evaluate an application on its need and desirability. And you can still throw them with the fact that you don't have engineering facilities in a particular area and not approve the application in terms of that. But there's no legal basis on which we can stand. Now, we've made submissions in terms of the planning bill for that to be included. And even if it's just a clause there that empowers municipalities to have a policy like that and to enforce it. That is critical, because then we can push it. We've worked out the financing models around that. We think it's viable to be done, but it's just that there's not the will to do it at the moment, especially from the private sector.
Honourable members, can we engage with the presentation? I think I didn't say it's your field, this one, but don't respond. Honorable Steen? Honorable Tolle? For now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was perhaps fortunate to be in Pretoria on just about a month ago, I think, when the presentation was made to Treasury. At the end of those presentations, there were some very informative, I think, comment from many of the other people that were not necessarily part of Johannesburg. My first question, therefore, to the presenter is, what has changed in the presentation you've just given us in relation to the presentation that was made a month ago, specifically with the comments that was made by various people? And I see one of them here that made some very interesting comments, that is now part of the, I think, National Department, and specifically looking after the USDG grants. So is there anything that you can point out to me? Because I couldn't really pick up any major changes. Then I think a point of concern for me, Chairperson, is Peter correctly identified this economic triangle. The impression I'm getting from your presentation is that we're not putting a lot of emphasis on extending or making that triangle bigger. You did touch on new and emerging nodes, but I'm not sure if we're doing enough to accelerate those emerging nodes, because we can't continuously, it's quite correct to increase your transport lines into those economic nodes for now. But at some point, it's going to become so saturated, we need to start looking at growing that triangle. And what for me, what doesn't come through in the presentation is the emphasis on trying to get economic nodes outside of the triangle, where we are, in fact, where we can deliver housing because of the land availability. Then, and perhaps it comes through if I study the last couple of pages, which on the presentation is a little bit too small. My eyesight is not what it used to be, Chair. What didn't come through in the rest of the presentation was the emphasis on the problems that we're currently experiencing across the country with bulk infrastructure. Now, I've very briefly looked at one or two line items, and I do see your upgrade of sewers, et cetera, et cetera. But again, in your presentation, the emphasis there doesn't come through. And it worries me if we don't make it a priority, it's going to slip through the cracks. Now, it may very well be in when you've got a housing project planned and identified that it's all built in. But because of what we've experienced with housing projects that do get built without any infrastructure there, I'd like to see some emphasis on both upgrading existing infrastructure and then obviously the new infrastructure where you're planning new housing. So you may very well have it, but as an outsider just looking at this presentation, the urgency, the emphasis doesn't come through for me, and I'm a bit worried that therefore we may just find ourselves with situations even in the future where we say, well, we've got a project that we can't go ahead with because we've got no infrastructure there. Then what also didn't come through for me, Chairperson, and we do know it's a problem, it's obviously the availability of what we call suitable land. But we have specifically a mandated HDA to look at that particular issue. And no mention whatsoever has been made about any talks or any cooperation with HDA. And it happens time and time again, irrespective of the municipality, the agency that does presentations to us, there just doesn't seem to be that cooperation and talks between whoever does a presentation and the HDA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, we want to thank the presentation from the City of Johannesburg. But what I want to find out, Chair, is the capacity. Do they have the capacity? Because if you can check, the migration in the City of Johannesburg is very high. So another thing, Chair, is the informal settlement. They show that there's some about 19 informal settlements which are unknown. If they can give us, what does that mean when they say that they are not known? And Chair, because if you check in the City of Johannesburg, most of properties are illegally occupied within the city. And we have some RDP houses which are illegally occupied in this load. What are they going to do? Because if they are being accredited now for housing, how are they going to cope? Thank you.
Chairman, I'm just raising a point. It may be a point for all metros raise the answer to the question. Because Johannesburg is raising a future residence of Johannesburg. And then, but this morning anyway, I think there was one area that was raised by, I think there's one professor who was conducting some study around Soweto. I think in that study came to a conclusion anyway that building all the malls, just saying this thing cut across all metros, building the malls in this township has almost killed the small enterprises. In fact, many of them have closed down. I just thought that the future citizen or future resident of Johannesburg surely he should be also be working on the economic development of Johannesburg. It's just important that when we deliver some of this matter, because the mistake anyway of Orange Farm and other areas generally was about taking people who are very poor. In fact, also the NPC, I think we have read the report of NPC, the National Planning Commission, that are raising the whole issue of integration of communities. That is still a bigger problem. I think the bigger problem that they raise also is the problem of racism anyway. Integration of a society and racism is still a bigger problem. I thought cities like Johannesburg, that is a world-class African city, as you say, it of course is your goal, there must be tangible thing that as we go there ourselves, we see them on yearly basis, let alone Soweto paving. I take that as fine. But don't forget that soil is bigger than that anyway. The sewer system, I think, is aging already. There are a lot of problems with our sewer system. There are a lot of other problems that I thought in a world-class African city must be addressed, let alone local economic development. And then, of course, the township that is right in the center of Johannesburg, Alexandra, I think is a bigger problem there. But notwithstanding all the development that is taking place, when you go to the town, go to the inner part of Alexandra, it's not better than 1980s. It's not better than 1980s. In fact, it's not better than at all. Despite the fact that there's a lot of development in Susumani, across the West Bank, but there's something that we must see in the tangible sense. There will be a lot of intangible things, a cultural change of a society, because a senior, I think a future citizen must also have a new cultural change, a cultural ethics that they will do. And then that will also encourage the education centers and all those matters should be there. I just guess that it's just Johannesburg, of course, really, I think, Gauteng is dealing with this matter. But also locating Johannesburg in an overall idea of a city-region idea in Gauteng, because I think the point that also Mr. Steyn, you are raising about expanding the nodes, economic nodes in Johannesburg, in order for us to allow people. Because really, I think the bigger problem that was raised by every person, that we are still taking poor persons far away from places of work. And I think the NPC was saying that, but I think Johannesburg as a city, I think the biggest city anyway, in South Africa, I'm told, it should be leading on this issue of integrating of society. I agree, maybe the problem is the development, the bill that you are talking about, that is not forcing private developers to have inclusion and approach in housing development. But I think that bigger problem is general. Because it's one thing to come and raise our expectation. And then when we go there, because anyway, we are always in Johannesburg almost every week. For practical reasons, Johannesburg is too important. All the way is moved to Joburg, you know. It's very rare to be in Botswana without Johannesburg, science, Swaziland, and Zimbabwe. Therefore, it's a very important city, or other cities are too important, but I think it's also a very important city. But I think that they're lacking in general in terms of the resuscitation of the inner city. There are problems there. But also, Pinar, you know very well that there are also squatters in top of these cities in Johannesburg. In fact, there are buildings that I thought Johannesburg should have demolished long time ago, notwithstanding, I don't know who are the owners. But some of them are very risky anyway. In fact, some of the streets in Johannesburg, when you go there, with people who are almost squatting in these old factories or whatever, I think it's a bigger problem in my view. I think Johannesburg should be addressing those issues here faster, because generally in winter, maybe before the end of July, again, you find fires there, people dying there. I think it's a risky problem, because by an African city, we mustn't be told that an African city, as we walk in Johannesburg, must feel it. That is a new African city that we are trying to build, and the systems, and the new person that you want to build in Johannesburg, a new citizen of Johannesburg or a resident of Johannesburg, should be a person that is vibrant anyway. But I don't think that is a science that generally we are finding in Johannesburg. I don't think it's a poor town anyway. They must be addressing this point. But that's the issue, sir, that I wanted to raise, because I do really think it's a broader issue, and the never is no longer for trouble. I really do think in general that there are RDP houses or the houses we call them now, affordable ones, that sometimes we need to rethink about them. Because I think we have wasted a lot of land. for no apparent reason anyway, really. If you go to, I think, Neville in the Orange Farm areas, and then there's a lot of land that is wasted, really, by these LTP houses. At a certain point in time, I think we must consider some times of reconsideration. How do you want to consolidate that to become a real city with job opportunities not to them? Even in Soweto anyway, except the malls, except the big mall, Maponya Mall, Chablan malls, there are no other small, medium enterprises that are thriving. So, except the liquor side of thing. I think the liquor side of thing in formal segment is there. But it's not really all about it. And then to me, I think Johannesburg really should assist us to understand this new citizen. And then if they can do that, of course, you know that is the first time they are giving us a report. But as they go on, also other cities must deal with economic development. What is the economic development plan? Because it's well and good about this development, but we don't even know how these people are going to find jobs. I think, to me, is a bigger problem.
Thank you, Honorable Richard. I think the issue of RDP housing, yes, it's very painful. Omohamanji, you are able to identify that this is an area where poor people live. So I think Honorable Richard is raising an important issue to say we have to develop a strategy. The department must look at that. It's easy to identify what if you can try as the department together with the municipalities, we close that gap. And then the issue of capacity. You have not put an emphasis if you do have capacity. For instance, there are other institutions that are assisting in terms of capacity building. If you don't have the institutional capacity, there's DPSA here. What is your strategic partnership with DPSA in terms of provisions of capacity? I'm raising this because DPSA has come before the committee and made a presentation to say they are assisting with the municipalities. Just to set an example, last year we visited the Western Cape, and the Western Cape told us that within the province there are 550 officials that have been deployed to the province, and within the metro only 253. So last week when we interacted with the DPSA, there was a question that was raised by the members to say we have got a fear that DPSA is going to have brain drainage very soon. So we wanted to know these people that are deployed to these municipalities, is there any provision that is made for skills transfer, or they just work if they are taking over? So I think though that we should have raised the issue of capacities is very much crucial to your presentation in terms of managing this grant. And I think another issue, the system in terms of allocation policy. Do we have the allocation policy? And then we do have a challenge on this HDDB. What is it? Housing Development Database. What is this thing of Housing Database? What? Yes. So this housing demand database, it's very crucial for us, because If your systems are not talking to each other, you raise that issue yourself in this presentation, that you are not sure whether you allocate houses and then those people, they come and get to the queue to get houses from other areas. It came out from your presentation. So I just want to check your systems, because if your systems don't talk to each other, we are going to have a problem of having duplications in application of in the allocation of the housing units. But that will affect the grant itself. At the end of the day, it's going to affect the grant. So that is why I think it is important to raise this issue. And it's not for Gauteng and for Johannesburg, it's for all the municipalities that they can touch on that one. Again, on the issue of capacity, we need to have a distinction between a lack of skills or capacity, or vice versa, the people would not want to do their work. I think we have to raise those issues, because sometimes the capacity is there, but people are not responsible. They are not accountable. So the accountability part of it within the institution, it's very crucial that we look at those issues. The land issue is one of the issues. I think if we can recall in I think it's between 2004 and 2005, the then minister Lindwe wabeka into yokuthi there must be a moratorium in this in selling of land by the municipalities, and we did not get a sense that that was happening to the developers. So I think we need to get a sense as the committee, how do you manage that process? We're not saying land must not be sold to the developers, but we need to get a sense of your commitment to the development of the poor people. So we have to link that to that, because it gives us a lot of problems. And then the issue of asset register, that land audit, I think it's very crucial. Kukhona nje omasipala nyana abangazazi ukuthi banomhlaba ongakanani. Abanye basa-auditana namhlanje, okokuba be-auditor. So I think we need to get a sense on those issues. So I think I can give you the opportunity to respond to the concerns of the members. Thank you. Okay.
And also,
okay.
I know that we didn't deal with the whole housing as a whole, but there's this issue that I think the metro should assist us also. Just indicate to us again on the question of cooperatives, really. What works are you doing around that issue? I think Johannesburg also is important on that. I think we must really assist us all the cities to get that information. Because it seems it's one thing that is making us a little bit unenthusiastic about it. I know it may be very difficult, but all people really are not assisting us to deal with the question of co-ops. Because you may learn from your experience in Johannesburg. As you visit other small town, we'll learn from you. But other cities are just to tell us exactly on the co-ops, what they are doing, what are the areas of work, giving anyway the state of unemployment too. And then because a new citizen that you want in Johannesburg, if it is unemployed, it won't be a new citizen.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to respond to some of these, and then I'll hand over to Walter to respond to some of the issues as well. I think just briefly on what has changed in the document, and admittedly the presentation didn't change that much. I had to cut out another 40 slides out of the presentation as well. to sort of get within the time limit. But I think within the document, the key issues, as I remember them, were really around there's an understanding that we're locked into a particular development process, but when will that sort of shift take place? And I think we've tried to, in the document in detail, express that it's year 3 and 4 where we see that there will become a gap in terms of funding becoming available to switch to newer projects, and also that we investigate all the current RDP-only projects to see to what extent we can retrofit a better mix into them. So that detail is within the document. That's the one major change. The other change that I think I must admit we failed in to bring about in the document is the link with the provincial budget. And we've had a number of meetings trying to sort this out, but by the time we submitted, there was no conclusive result that certainly from Johannesburg side we were comfortable with. And it's a matter, I think Baltic can maybe expand on that, but off an 878 million rand budget in Gauteng, you know, the city, the best figure we got from that was 64 million, and at one stage in the meeting it went down to 25 million. But I think there we failed to incorporate that in the document, and it's work that's ongoing, and it's a process that will unfold. In terms of that economic triangle, I think there's a major push for expanding the economic links of the city, especially to where the public transportation links are going. Into Soweto, those emerging nodes there are critical, and we're pushing those very hard. But in the same instance, the point that's been raised about a mall taking the business away of 25, 50 people that were looking after themselves, it's clear. It is an issue, and Maponya Mall is a case in point. I think what we're trying to do in most of these areas, if you look at the Dipsuit example and some areas in Soweto, where we do this kind of planning, we're looking at it not in terms of major malls and everything, but micro businesses. The city has also set up a funding mechanism and a small enterprise development vehicle so that we can actually get that going. We see it as extremely important and be well aware of that kind of thing. The issue around bulk infrastructure, I think it is a major emphasis. I didn't emphasize it that much in the presentation itself, but with the rollout, you'll see if one analyzes all the housing programs and the projects that's in there, a lot of that, in fact, the bulk of the money goes for bulk infrastructure from our side. So most of that money is for bulk infrastructure, and to ensure exactly that we don't get a housing development without that infrastructure. My concern is more on the social infrastructure side. The box, we can deal with. That's the easy part. The social infrastructure, out of this 5.4 billion over the next 5 years, we need an additional 2.1 billion if we want to have sustainable human settlements with those community facilities in place. And that money is not available at the moment. So that is a key issue for ourselves. The issue around the HDA, I think, would you deal with that as well? Settlements unknown. At the stage when we've done the study in terms of all the informal settlements, those are informal settlements where further studies had to be done to see could they be in situ upgraded or do they have to be relocated. That was really the classification. So those are ones that we still don't know exactly what to do with. And plans are afoot and studies are currently ongoing to make that assessment. That's the classification on that. I think the points around the integration of society and the cultural change and the real feeling it when you walk the city as points that we take as comments inner city housing issue as part of the whole housing program. I think the main difficulty there for us is that to deal with buildings within the inner city, you need a good supply of transitional housing within the city. And we've got quite a number of transitional housing projects that's going on. The fact of the matter is it's not always transitional housing. When people are moved to another building, it's not possible to move all of those people out of the building again when there's new housing because of the non-qualifiers and everything like that. So we're forever on the back foot there, and it remains a critical issue. We do have links with the DBSA, especially on some of our programs, Deep Sloot being a case in point, where we work very closely together. But I think the point is taken that we're probably not tapping into that capacity adequately, and we will look at that as well. The only other thing I'd like to say before I hand over to Walter is around land. From the city side, we know exactly what land we own. We know exactly where it is. We've identified the land that we feel are strategically located that needs to be developed in a particular way, and we're managing it in that way. What we have struggled with is to get the same from other spheres of government, to say exactly what is it that is state-owned and to what extent can we latch onto that and maybe combine the land holdings, the state land holdings as a total, and be part of the development program. And there, it's difficult to get accurate information on that. Once we have that, we'd be able to see how to incorporate into plans and start those discussions. But that has been a problem. Walter.
It means you have to strengthen your interactions between HDE, because HDE its mandate is purely dealing with land issues, acquiring of land, identification. They identify, they acquire, there's quite a lot of issues that are there. So I think if you are working closely with it, and it's quite amazing. Because when HDA comes before the portfolio committee, we are getting another picture now. It means that partnership is not yet working well. So can you try and strengthen that partnership? But I think our reports from our oversight, they can assist you. We have been to Gauteng. The one at Orange Farm has been an issue. The issue of storage is very critical. And if we don't address it now, it's also forget. Not necessarily the Orange Farm, but as we have raised the concern that at least it's not something that we have done it on ourselves. Because now we know Joburg is growing. So the sewage plants now are decaying. So if we can look at that. So we do have a report that talks to Gauteng. It's going to assist you in your strategic plans. Just a follow-up question.
Actually, Chairperson, I'm covered with the HDA one because I think there's no working relationship between them. But what I want to find out is about the province and the municipality. Are you guys working together? Especially with the issue of land, too.
Thanks, Chair. The one of the critical things that I think we sort of having challenges with is the whole issue of IGR between ourselves and province. And I don't think that issue is unique to the city of Johannesburg. I mean, the whole issue of accreditation came with additional challenges between the metros as well as the provincial government. I mean, as the colleague has rightfully said, the issues of allocation, there seem not to be willingness of alignment of programs between ourselves and province.
And I don't think it's fair, I mean, to mention some of the things, I mean, in here, because you also want to use the portfolio committee to actually sort out our relationships. But that's one issue that is a huge challenge. The point that we raised with Pacific National, we said USDG is going to actually assist the metros to try and start to drive some of the development program. But the risk we actually ran a risk of actually doing what we did 15 years with the MyWare program, where we're going to go far ahead with services, and province will come dragging behind with the human development grant in terms of provision of subsidies. So that's one issue that needs to sort of be taken. There was a question that was asked by one of the portfolio committee members with regard to what do we do with specific to illegal houses that are occupied in Deepslot now that we are created. We know in Deepslot there's about 109 houses that were illegally occupied some 8-9 years ago. We've dealt with the issues between ourselves and province. We are actually in the process of looking at the occupants of those houses. If they qualify for houses, regularize them. Those that don't, look at the process what to do with it. Because, I mean, it was a challenge of the whole issue of houses that have been built during the nation that occupied. So we know the issue around that. On the issues of what is it that the city is doing with regard to forced racial integration, I mean, we've taken a point as a city that says, all new developments that are happening in the city of Johannesburg, number one, won't be in the periphery, and number two, we're actually using strategic land that is owned by the city within housing job opportunities. I mean, the point is, there's a piece of land, the members know, in South Hills, the famous Wema Penn serial killer. Huge stretch of land that is about 110 hectares. We went into partnership with the Standard Bank, where we said, come, we'll give the apologies, make sure that whatever you do, number one, it's sustainable, and then number two, you bring your money as a sign off by the initial minister of new settlement. So those are some of the things we're doing. I mean, the issues of where are we starting to create new cities? We've got a project like Lutheran, and all the programs that we're doing, we're actually saying it's not going to make any sense for us to do anything without actual integration. And the challenge is always, I mean, we can build all these townships as long as other series of government, specifically Department of Education and Health, don't see the same vision to make sure that we've got one plan. It's sort of a challenge. On the issues of the housing demand database, now that the cities have been accredited, I mean, one of the things that you're doing is actually going to manage the whole issue of the HSS system. And we started an engagement with province to make sure that we don't go and create our own new ADD, but we utilize the existing one, and you make sure that your old backlog is sort of dealt systematically to make sure that people do benefit. The issues of how do we regenerate the inner city, the city of Johannesburg, we've got what you call the inner city property scheme. But the challenge with that, I mean, as much as the solution to actually entice the private investors in line with the UDZ to come and regenerate the inner city, is the whole issue of how do you access grant funding for emergency facilities, because I mean, that type of money also still comes from the same pot of the human settlement development grants, which I mean, stems from province. And if you get comments like that, what we're having now, the state of Johannesburg, that province says they've got money for the next coming 3 years, they've committed to programs that are not necessarily in line with the focus that we want to take the USDG to. So that's one element that still has to be brought into being and say, how do we make sure that we see the same picture? And I think in closing, Chair, the issues of institutional capacity to make sure that we utilize the lives of DBSA, that we've done that with Deepslot, but we believe that we can still do more. We're also looking at old townships that we've done. A point is, we've done Lehigh, for example, in the south, where we've done 3,000 RDP houses. We are supposed to run 3,000 RDP housing higher as phase 2. But then the city, we said, we cannot do 3,000. We actually go and change the apologies. We are doing 6,000 units, which is mixed and integrated. So we have actually taken heed to the notion that says it cannot be built as usual. You can't continue taking the poor to clamp them in one little corner.
Jovic Metro. nabo akalisa abantu base Gauteng. Mr. Stage, Subanga inanzika apa is center stage.
I was just curious, the presenter mentioned that they've got a capital of 3.8 billion. And he said specifically it's just enough to tick by. What of that amount is the grant? Is it the entire amount? Or is I'd like to know what's the split between the grant and what the city is actually putting in as well.
A comfort break, strictly 3 minutes. By the time they are still setting themselves, yeah, it is strictly 3 minutes.